Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Everything that we earn, every title, every bit of power, every prestige, all of this, it dissipates. It dissipates very, very quickly. So how do we create meaning, knowing the fleetingness, and also universally the insignificance of what we do? Well, our meaning is to recognize that simultaneous nothingness and everythingness of our existence. And so let's say you're lying on your back and you're looking up at the stars. So that fills all of us. Doesn't matter your religion, doesn't matter your language, your culture. But it's impossible to look up at the stars and not feel like nothing. Feel so insignificant. And if you stay there long enough and you allow your heart to open, what you feel is you are the stars. You are the space. There is no place you end and space begins. We raise our hands to the light. And you raise them high enough and you realize you are the light. The light for which you are reaching is emanating out of your fingers. And it becomes that awareness, that felt sense awareness, not an intellectual knowledge, but a felt sense awareness of our connection to the universe, which renders the individual I meaningless, yes, but it renders the real I of vast significance, because I am the universe. And so what we do gets done out of an awareness of my connection to the universe, out of an awareness of my crucial role in the universe. And, you know, as I always remind people, that doesn't mean it's going to be big and important and glamorous and romantic and fun. But nonetheless, it's a piece that holds the rest together. You know, scientifically, as more and more species are going extinct, it's a really interesting phenomenon, both from a science perspective and a spiritual perspective, because as we lose these tiny, tiny species of insects that you'd think, really, who cares? Like that particular species of butterfly, or that particular species of worm, or that particular species of bee. Who cares? Doesn't impact my life, we think. But actually, the ripple impact, the global impact that science is now giving us of the extinction of one species of butterfly, of one species of bee, can lead to global pandemics, can lead to global starvation, That's, it's not that that butterfly is so powerful. It's not that that butterfly is feeding people. It's that that butterfly is so intricately connected to the world, to the pollinization of the trees that it lands on, to carrying the pollen to other places the trees then grow, the trees, whatever it may be. Every aspect here is crucial. And so we recognize on a deep spiritual level the simultaneous nothingness and everythingness of our existence. And then we really pledge to just live our lives with that awareness that whatever I'm doing, I mean, you could look at what does a butterfly do? What does the bee do? What does this earthworm do? Well, in the global scheme of things, it certainly doesn't seem very big and important. But actually, it's crucially important. And so whatever role we are playing, it's of crucial importance. We may not be able to see it. We may not know it. But if you're able to step back enough to see the full tapestry, the thread of which each of us is a part becomes apparent. You know, if you've got, let's say, a very beautiful, expensive wool sweater made of God knows how many, you know, thousands and thousands of threads. Well, one thread isn't very significant at all until it unravels. Right? You never notice one thread. Who cares? One thread. But the minute that one thread catches on, you know, a nail somewhere or a hook somewhere and begins to unravel, what you find is it pulls the whole sweater with it. And so our meaning in life is the thread we all are as part of the global tapestry. And so how to live that? And of course, there's no cookie cutter answer to that because we're all different threads. We're all different parts in that existence. But to do whatever we do with full sincerity, with full commitment. Because the only way not to be doing what you're supposed to do is to be by being lazy, being distracted, ignoring it. That insincerity. That's the only way to make sure that you're not getting it. But whatever you do, do it fully. Do it sincerely. Do it with an awareness of your thread and the impact that that's having on the whole tapestry. And even if you can't make a commitment to, you know, create the whole tapestry, make a commitment that at least you're going to make sure your thread doesn't unravel. You're going to make sure that you are not the thread that unravels. And that's really all each of us can do. And stay open. Because the universe is going to flow through you. Like the butterfly knows where to fly. The bee knows where to fly. They're not embarking on a mission to pollinate the earth. They're just flying and landing. They're just looking for soft spots to land. They're not getting bonus points for how many flowers they pollinate. They don't go home and say, "Hey, Mom, guess what? I carried that pollen to the farthest place out. I'm the best pollinator you've got." It's not even part of their awareness. But they're listening to that just inner voice that says, "Fly here, land here." Or in many cases, they're just following what the other butterflies are doing. And that's how it all stays together. So if you can find meaning in that, then no matter what you're doing, at home, in the office, in the garden, in traffic. It's all meaningful. Because every moment is able to be used. No moment gets wasted. You don't find yourself doing things to just pass the time. You don't find yourself wasting time. Because every moment becomes very, very precious.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. The saints, the sages, the masters of all religions, in fact, emphasize being in the present moment, emphasize mindfulness, emphasize the power of now. Right here, right now, it's my only hope for peace. It's my only hope for happiness. I always say you cannot be happy yesterday or tomorrow. You can only be happy right here and right now. And so, how to be in the present? Well, the first and most powerful way, really, that I have found is your breath. Because you also can't breathe yesterday or tomorrow. You have to breathe right now. And the breath grounds us and connects us to ourselves. To this moment, in a way that almost nothing does. But it has to be not the breath up here. The breath up here tends to be the breath of anxiety, breath of planning, breath of worrying, breath of regretting. If you can bring the breath to low in your abdomen, you may have to even just begin by putting your hand there and sort of feeling like you're blowing up a balloon. Put the hand, you know, just below your belly button and above the groin. And as you inhale, just see, can you really feel like you're pushing your hand out, like you're blowing up a balloon? And then as you exhale, it relaxes, like a balloon is deflating. If it's difficult for you sitting up, a much easier way to do it is lying on your back in bed. Lie on your back, put your hand on your belly, and feel it rising and dropping, rising and dropping. And as you bring the awareness to the breath, it grounds you right here in this moment. The minute your mind goes to the past or the future, you lose your connection with the breath. So bring the awareness to the breath. You can also add a mantra. You'll notice this sounds very much like what we do in meditation. Well, being in the present is really about being in meditation right here, right now. You don't have to be in a dark room. You don't have to have your legs crossed. You don't have to have your eyes closed. You can do it sitting in a board meeting. You can do it being yelled at by anyone, really. You can do it sitting in traffic. Bring the awareness to the breath. Chant a mantra if you have one. If not, you can chant Soham. It means I am that. I am one with the universe. I am the universe. And it's very hard to be really upset about, you know, the deal that went wrong yesterday or the guy who cheated you last week or what's going to happen in your meeting tomorrow while you're simultaneously aware that I am creation, I am the universe. Somehow suddenly everything else pales in comparison. Be there. Another beautiful technique is being in the heart. Because love, you can also not love yesterday or tomorrow. You love right here, right now. And so, different practices, depending on where you are, what's happening. But breath and heart. And of course, they go together because you can love while you breathe. But bring the awareness to the heart. Can you feel love? Can you feel love in this moment? Doesn't necessarily have to be love for the situation you're in. You don't have to necessarily love the board of trustees or love being yelled at by, you know, your parent or spouse or an in-law or an employer. But nonetheless, can you connect to the universal source of love? Put your hands on your heart, feel it. Brings you right here, right now. And so between those two, you should be able to come back to the present moment.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. So when we know death is inevitable, why is it so hard to accept? It's a really interesting dichotomy because on the one hand, the only thing that is sure about life is death. Literally, there are no other guarantees. If somebody said to me, you have to tell my future, tell me something. The only thing that I could say with confidence is, you will die. The rest, I don't know. I mean, you could say, okay, there's a good chance this, good chance that, depending on who you are, what you do. But I couldn't say anything with certainty other than, you will die. So on the one hand, we have this one certainty. And on the other hand, we actually live our lives as though death were something that will never happen. So we're living in this weird irony of the only thing we can count on is the only thing that most of us are not considering when we're actually making our minute-to-minute, hour-to-hour decisions. I think the reason for that is it's scary. Most of us live our lives from the place of our egos. And I don't mean our egos in a bad sense. I don't mean egos in a sense of you're arrogant or, but ego in the sense of that false self, that identity, that personality, that identification with the body, the role, the history. And in order to be able to live from that place, I need to believe that there is some sort of inherent value in that. I have to believe that there's some sort of inherent isness of this. And the minute that I recognize that actually all that really is the soul, because this body is just degenerating, could go any moment. I mean, we have no idea. This roof could collapse on us. We could all go together. Could be an earthquake. The earth could open up, swallow us all together. Ganga could rise up. I mean, any one of a million things could happen. We have no idea. But if I'm going to live from the place of my roles, from the place of my identity as this body, as my job, as my relationships, as the money I make, as what I look like, as all of these things, I have to believe in some kind, at least of semi-permanence of it, some validity in it. But the awareness of death is something that carries with it also the aspect that, well, if the body's dying, what is it that's not dying? Who am I really? If the body dies, and if we believe in reincarnation, which I do, I'm going to get another one. Well, then what is it that's actually stable? It's not the body. It's not the bank account. It's not the title, it's not the career, it's not the relationships. It's the soul. But that's very scary to the ego, because the ego really likes to be the king of everything. The ego likes to think that it's sort of all about the ego. And of course, the ego doesn't call itself the ego calls itself I. So the ego has kind of taken kabza of everything and likes to make it be all about that. It's all about your title. It's all about your career. It's all about your identity. And every moment that you're aware of death is a moment that shakes the ego. And since what most of our thoughts are rooted in is stuff that comes from the ego, we're not thinking about death. So we live in that tragic irony. And the sages and the saints and the mystics remind us over and over again, you don't know how to live unless you know how to die. And you're not really living unless you're living with an acute awareness of death. And it's not morbid, and it's not depressing. In fact, it's the opposite. It makes every moment so precious. It makes tiny little things really irrelevant. As you know, whenever anybody gets diagnosed with a terminal illness, sometimes the things that mattered no longer matter. The neighbor whose noise was too loud, the guy whose dog barked, the annoying colleague, all these things that, you know, occupied your brain all the time suddenly don't matter at all. They're utterly irrelevant. because life is slipping through your hands. Or slipping through the hands of one you love. And so a beautiful practice is to live in as much awareness of death as you can. Again, not morbidly, not from a depressed state, but how to do it both. You know, one of the personal practices I have is the cremation ground for Rishikesh is just a little bit down from on the other side of the river. If you're looking immediately across from where we have Arati, it's not right there, but it's a little bit down. So if directly across were 12 o'clock, this would be, say maybe at 10 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock down the river. And sometimes there'll be a cremation going on because, of course, you have to do a cremation before sunset. And so sometimes there'll be a cremation going on. And whenever there is, I use the opportunity to really try to meditate with my eyes open in a way where I am simultaneously here in the Arati, ecstatically celebrating, full of life and joy, bliss, gratitude. And I'm over there, standing around a loved one who's burning. And if I can go deep enough, I'm the one being burned. And simply the attempt to live in those three places simultaneously. It's easy to go from one to the other back and forth. It's very, very, very difficult to hold all of that awareness at the same time. To create enough space inside that you're burning and you're dancing. You're singing and you're mourning. But for the moments, for the split second moments, when it happens, it's so deep and so profound and so real that for a moment you really touch what this is all about, that we're not the body. And that actually I am the one burning. Because that time-space thing starts to fold in such a way and collapse in such a way that it's not just about imagining when it will be me who is burning. But actually in this moment, because this whole linear continuum of time anyway we know isn't true, both from quantum physics as well as from spirituality. And so can you get unstuck enough of that linear aspect of time that actually that is you burning over there? And again, it's not easy, but what I have found is that even the attempt at this takes you very, very deep. Just to open yourself to the possibility of going there takes you very, very deep. And it's the only answer that I have to that tragic irony is to try to bridge it as much as we can without the depression and the sadness. Because, of course, thinking about death is tragic. Experiencing death of loved ones is tragic. And the only last point that I would mention on that is grief needs its place. And whether we are the one grieving or whether we're the one consoling people who are grieving, typically what we do is we say, oh, stop crying, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, We wipe each other's tears and, it's okay, you'll get over it, Be strong. I don't know a world in which repression of your feelings equates strength. I don't know a world in which pushing away the current reality equates strength. Now, sometimes you may be a parent of very, very, very young children and you've lost a spouse and they've lost a parent and people need you to be strong for them. That's different. But in our own grieving, grief is very real and it needs a place. Grief occupies space. And if you don't create space for it or allow the space to be there because we try to squeeze it away into the I'm okay, go away, it just ends up popping up somewhere else. And so we allow ourselves the space. And over time, what you find is that you never really stop grieving. I don't know anyone who has lost a loved one who ever really gets over it. But it changes over time. It no longer keeps you from sleeping or eating or thinking or enjoying. It no longer keeps you from living in joy. It doesn't keep you from laughing. It doesn't keep you from smiling. It doesn't keep you from marveling at a beautiful sunrise or sunset or a book or a movie. I mean, it no longer is something that interferes with and interrupts and pervades every aspect of life. But that's how it is in the beginning. And that's okay. And that's very real. And so whether we're the ones grieving or someone we care about is grieving, the most important thing is just allow the space for it. Slowly, slowly, what'll happen is into that space, when you're real with it, there'll be grief one moment. Then maybe the grief shifts to anger. Then the anger will shift to joy because a moment, a memory will come. You know, there'll be anger of how dare you leave me, or how dare you not have worn your seatbelt, or how dare you not have taken better care of your health, or how dare you, God, for taking this loved one away from me. Whoever the anger is directed toward. Then a moment, a memory will arise. And you'll smile or you'll laugh. You'll experience the love. And that's also real. Because the other thing we do in grief is we push away then the love. We push away the smiles. We push away the laughter. As though somehow, while you're grieving, you shouldn't also be laughing and smiling at the beautiful memories that you have. Because that's also real. The years, the decades that person was with you brought lots and lots of joy and laughter. And that's just as real now as the grief at losing them. And so when we're honest with our emotions and we're able to just sit and allow them to be there, what you find is they shift. They shift like waves in an ocean, literally. It's pain, it's anger, it's joy, it's fear. What's going to happen to me now? Where are they? It's regret. I should have, I could have, I didn't, I shouldn't have. It's all of these different feelings. And so we have to make sure that there's lots of space inside us, and also that we try to create some space in our lives. Try to be a little bit unbusy for a while. Because it takes some time. And then who you are will shift and change a little bit. So as I said, it's not that you ever get over it. It's that who you are grows around that wound, around that emptiness, such that you don't always feel it as emptiness. And sometimes even in that emptiness, from that emptiness, other beautiful feelings grow. But it's different. It's different than it was before you lost the loved one. It's never going to be exactly the same. And we just allow. We allow the shift within us.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. How do I accept another person who does not want to stay in a relationship with me? So this is the stuff that comes up all the time in life, whether we are children in school, and one day we have a friend who the next day decides they don't want to be our friend. It happens with boyfriends and girlfriends in societies where dating is prevalent, but it also happens even as we get older. My dad is a divorce attorney in LA, and divorces come out of typically one person. Sometimes it's both, but most of the time it's one person who wants out. Not that the other one, of course, thinks everything is going perfectly, but typically you'll see one who wants to make it work, wants to keep trying, and one who says, enough. So there's so many different times in which we are face to face with people not wanting a relationship with us, whether it's friends, whether it's romantic. Sometimes even tragically we see it in families. Family members who don't speak to each other. Families who have an argument, some kind of a conflict, and stop speaking to each other for years, decades. It's over. Forget it. So there's a lot of different ways in which that problem can arise. And as we speak about so frequently here, we really don't have any control over anything other than ourselves. You cannot force someone to want to be in a relationship with you. You certainly can't force anyone to love you. As anyone who's ever tried to do that knows, doesn't work. In fact, it's almost tragically ironic that the more you try to force and push, the more actually you're pushing that person away. But you also can't even force someone to stay in a relationship without love. You can't force people to do anything. So the solution to this, or the way into this, is really the same way into all of those circumstances in our life in which we would like things to be different, but we don't have any control over them. And the only way in this circumstance to handle it is to handle ourselves. For some reason, sometimes it's about us, sometimes it's about them. Typically, it's some combination thereof. Very rarely does someone want to break off a relationship, and it's all one person. People will tell you it is. They'll say, you know, it's all your fault. But it's almost never all one person. And the way that we know this is, I can't tell you how many times, you know, growing up, you see this all the time with kids, where kids and young people, teenagers, will complain about their parents. Oh my God, my mom this. Oh my God, my dad that. But then friends come to the house and they say, oh my God, your mom is the best. Your dad is the best. I don't know how you can possibly complain. You've got the best parents. People will complain about what their husband does, what their wife does. And other people say, oh my God, you've got the best husband. You have the best wife. You're so lucky. And so a lot of what goes wrong is an interaction. It's very rarely that really one person is all right and one person is all wrong. Typically just has to do with, you know, as they say, rubbing each other the wrong way. But the question that was asked is what to do when someone doesn't want to have the relationship. So that's a different question than how do we save our marriage. When one person has already decided they want out, your situation is no longer, how can I make it work? Your situation is now, what do I need to do inside to be okay with this? And there's two pieces to it. The first piece is the same general letting go. When we lose anything, when anything in our life doesn't go according to how we want it to go, we have no choice but to let go of the expectation of how we expected it to be, to have gratitude for what we had, because we had it for a certain period of time. And to realize that whatever happens is happening ultimately for a reason. That doesn't mean I deserve it. It doesn't mean I've done something bad and that's why I'm being punished. But it means that the universe's highest goal is to get me to wake up. The universe's highest goal is to teach me something about myself, about the nature of me and the universe. The divinity of who I am, the fullness, the completeness of who I am. The nature's goal, the universe's goal is not everything should always work out perfectly in my life. Everything should always happen exactly as I want it. The universe's goal is that I experience who I am. Sometimes that takes the form of health. Sometimes it takes the form of sickness. Sometimes it takes the form of success. Sometimes it takes the form of failure. Sometimes it takes the form of gain. Sometimes it takes the form of loss. But to recognize that my highest goal in life is not to hold on to everything. My highest goal in life is to experience the truth of who I am. And if in order to make that happen, the universe burned down my house, or the universe made the stock market crash, or the universe has had me left by someone I love, It's so that I can take that next step on my awakening. So that's the general part of that. The more specific part is when it's a love relationship, to recognize that just because someone has stopped loving me, just because someone wants out of the relationship, and again, remember, as I said, this is a two-part interaction. Doesn't mean there's something wrong with me. It simply means that where that person is now in their growth, where I am in my growth, it no longer fits in a way that is comfortable to that other person. It absolutely doesn't mean there is something wrong with me. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes it's I've grown. I've changed. I've expanded in a certain way. And the person I was in a relationship with doesn't want to grow and expand that way. You see it happen all the time with people on a spiritual path whose friends suddenly want to stop hanging out with them. You used to go out to parties. You used to go out and get drunk. You used to go and pick up girls or guys or whatever it was. And you had friends who you did that with. And then suddenly you started meditating, or suddenly you embarked on a spiritual path, and suddenly going out and getting drunk just isn't the way that you want to spend your free time. Suddenly, randomly picking up people isn't what appeals to you. And so you say to your friends, well, you know, instead of the bar tonight, maybe we could go and listen to an inspirational talk. You know, there's this spiritual person, they're giving a talk, let's go there instead. Or instead of going to the club and getting drunk and dancing to that music, let's go listen to some kirtan. There's a beautiful kirtan program going on. Let's go there. And slowly, slowly, you may find that your friends stop calling you on the weekends. Or when you call them and you say, you know, let's hang out, suddenly they've got all kinds of excuses of why they can't hang out. Now, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. What it means is that how you've grown, how you've changed, is something that is not comfortable for them. They would like to keep drinking and picking people up and doing things that no longer appeal to you. And so that's just one example, but it's really important to remember that it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. Doesn't mean you're the problem. Doesn't mean they're the problem. It simply means that there's a distinction between what my values are, what my priorities are, and what theirs are. How I want to spend my free time, how they want to spend their free time. But just because someone says they don't love you anymore, someone doesn't want to be in a relationship with you anymore, doesn't mean that you lose the love. The love that you feel for someone is inside you. It doesn't exist in them. They have sparked it. They have catalyzed it. They have been the medium through which you have experienced love. You know, the example that I always give about this is these air conditioning units we have in the back of the room, well, they give cold air. And if you stand close to them, those of you on the couches in the back, you get the most cold air. And those of us up at the front of the room, we get the least cold air. And if I go out and I go around to the other side of the wall, I'm not going to feel any cold air. Because the cold air literally exists in those machines. It's not that the machines have somehow catalyzed my hypothalamus to change how it functions and suddenly to give me cold air inside. It's not that it's changed the working of my body to suddenly make me feel cooler. The cold air is actually a property of those machines. In order to benefit, you have to stand close to it. But that's not how love works. When you love someone, they've catalyzed a change in you. And that love is now in you. And yes, you may experience it more when you think about them. You may experience it more in their presence because it reminds you. But when they get up and they go to the grocery store, or they go away for the weekend, or you go home at night and they go home at night, you don't feel less love. The love is in you. It doesn't vary based on distance. And so in the same way, if that person, instead of being physically distant, simply says, I don't want to be in the relationship, well, that love, that's still your right. No one can take that from you. They can remove their physical presence. They can remove the relationship. They can say, I don't want to be your friend or your boyfriend or girlfriend or your husband or wife. But they cannot take away the love in your heart. They cannot make you stop feeling that. That's in you. And so remember that, because so much what hurts is the love feels so good. Loving someone feels so good. And when we lose that, when we lose the relationship rather, we feel like we've lost the love because we cut ourselves off to it. Now when I think about that person, I feel pain instead of love. And so I cut myself off. To go into that love is painful. But if I can realize that the love is actually still there, the pain is in my mind, pain is in my ego. And I don't mean that to belittle it. It's just that's where it exists. The love is in me. And I can access that whether somebody has chosen to end a relationship with me or whether someone has passed away. In both cases, they are no longer with me physically. But in both cases, I still have my love for them. That's my gift to me. They just catalyzed it. And so that's another really important thing to remember, is they can remove their presence. They cannot remove the love from your heart. And so hold on to that, because love is a gift. And even when you start loving someone else, which pretty inevitably you will, feels like you will never will, but chances are you will, you can still love them as well. Because the beautiful thing about the heart is it just keeps expanding. It's not like a box that can only hold a certain amount and then it bursts. The heart actually keeps expanding. The more you love, the more it expands. So hold on to that love. And then, of course, open the heart and love more. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.